back to the Phil Cowan program on AM 1380, The Answer.
Thank you, Dave. 22 minutes now before 9 o'clock, and I got to get our guest in here. I'm trying to hustle because we're running a little bit late. Chris Orcutt is our guest. Chris is an author and novelist, and I got this pitch for him the other day that he wanted to talk about lunar mining, which has always been a subject of some interest to me. Good morning, Chris Orcutt.
Good morning, Phil. Thank you so much for having me on your program.
Absolutely my pleasure, and I cannot let the moment pass without plugging your work as a novelist. Chris, I consider myself a pretty well-read aficionado of detective fiction.
Okay.
And I had not read any of your books, and then when we booked you as a guest, I read A Real Piece of Work, the first in your Dakota Stevens series over the weekend. Dude, that is a very good book.
Hey, thank you, Phil. I can't thank you enough for that. You know, when you're doing this, you really want readers to enjoy the work. That's why we do this work as novelists. And to have you say that is extremely gratifying.
Honestly, it's not just because you're my guest. I have read just about all of them, and some I've enjoyed more than others. I consider Dakota Stevens right up there with, you know, whether it's Elvis Cole or a host of others. That was a really fine book. I can't wait to read the other two.
Well, the other two are, I've been told they get better and better. And this latest, A True Stranger Than Fiction, again, Dakota Stevens is a New York-based private eye. In the latest one, A True Stranger Than Fiction, that's where this topic of lunar mining and helium-3 comes from.
Ah, okay. Well, let's talk about helium-3 for a minute, because that was one of the things you brought up. I didn't know anything about it until, again, I booked you as a guest and I did a little reading. It is exceedingly rare here on planet Earth. However, it is more common on the lunar surface, and as I understand it, as a radioactive isotope, Chris, it is either completely stable or it has a half-life so long that we can't calculate it.
Well, it's a stable isotope of helium, meaning that it has an extra neutron, and that's where it gets the term helium-3. And the significance of helium-3 is this, that it can be used in nuclear fusion. You know, what we have on Earth in terms of nuclear reactions and our nuclear reactors that produce electricity are based on fission,
right,
where, you know, of course, the splitting plutonium, uranium. But the problem there is that you get the energy, but you've also got radioactive waste.
Right.
With nuclear fusion, particularly
but
with
helium-3.
You know
what, Chris? We'll just bury that in Nevada.
Yeah. Okay. That there's the idea. But you know, the thing that really intrigued me here about helium-3, Phil, is that the U.S. government has known about this for a long time. I mean, they first discovered that helium-3 was embedded in the soil going back to the original Apollo missions, and they brought back rocks and they analyzed the rocks and analyzed the soil. And they discovered that helium-3, which can be used in this fusion process, is available in great quantities on the moon, as you pointed out earlier, because our magnetic field repels it. It's produced by the sun as a waste product and ends up on the moon. And I became curious in about 2007. I saw this documentary about lunar mining and helium-3. And at that time, President Bush announced we were going back to the moon. And I said, gosh, they must be going up there to establish a lunar mining colony. Well, in 2010, the Bakken Formation in North Dakota and Montana starts spewing out oil from fracking, oil and natural gas, and suddenly all talk of lunar mining disappeared. And I became very intrigued by that fact, and I wondered why, you know, there was no more talk of going to the moon, and it led me to look more into helium-3 and its potential, and I don't understand why our government isn't doing more here. China right now has a probe circling the moon and is supposed to land on the lunar surface, bring back rocks, they're scheduled to go back to the moon in 2017. The point, Phil, is China knows this. They know that this resource is up there, and they're working on this.
Well, and that really is the big question, and it's like offshore drilling in the Gulf of Mexico. Mm-hmm. Much as there are people who blanch at the thought, boy, in many cases, Chris, if we don't go get it, someone else is going to, and there are people who will likely be less careful than we are.
Yeah, I mean, it's an undeniable resource, Phil. And see, you know, the thing is, I think one of the problems here is that people get this idea that it's science fiction, that it's impossible. But the thing is, Phil, everything that's possible today was once considered impossible.
Yep.
Or foolish. I mean, 130 years ago, this black goo is coming out of the ground, and nobody knew what to do with it. You know, and then J.D. Rockefeller comes along, and he has a vision, and he says, gosh, you know what, we can refine this and use the kerosene to light our homes. And then he further looks into it and discovers, hey, gosh, there's this waste product associated with the process called gasoline. The point is that it was considered kooky. It was considered off the wall, impossible.
And much too unstable to work with at the time.
Exactly. But then there's the advent of the internal combustion engine. And, you know, the thing is, Phil, the reason why I think that we need to make this a national priority, and I'm not just talking about the government here. I'm not saying the government should be spewing out money to do this. This needs to be a corporate government endeavor. And, you know, there's a company in California down in the Silicon Valley called Moon Express. And it's led by a billionaire named Naveen Jain. And they just hired as their president Buzz Aldrin's son, Andrew. And their whole aim is they want to be the first commercial entity to land on the moon and begin a lunar mining operation, not just for helium-3, but other rare elements.
Well, and that's the other issue. I mean, beyond helium-3, Chris Orcutt, from a more immediate and pragmatic perspective, there are just a lot of very useful minerals and metals in great quantities on the moon, cadmium and a host of other things that we could start getting right away.
Absolutely, and I mean, in the electronics industry, I you seem to know more about the specific elements that are used there, but exactly what you're saying, in the semiconductor industry, there are these very, very rare earth elements that are necessary in refining semiconductors, and, you know, they're not available here on Earth, but they're up there. And, here's the thing, Phil. You know, our economy, the U.S. economy for over 100 years has been on a yo-yo effect in part because of oil. You know, we see it all the time. You know, oil prices rise, it has an effect on oil prices drop, it has an effect on the economy. And the only people who seem to be getting rich out of this are oil speculators on Wall Street. But the thing is, in every case in American history, technological change has created booms in the economy. The telegraph, railroad, oil, yeah. Electricity, the automobile, plane, the space program, the internet.
Those major shifts are always about creative destruction.
Yes. John Steinbeck once said, you know, I always wonder why progress looks so much like destruction.
Nah, that's why. I'll tell you what, I've got to get to a quick break here. Stay with me. When we come back, Chris, I want to discuss the issues. We were talking about a private contractor going up there of sovereign claims on the moon and whether or not we know anything about that from a legal perspective. We'll have more with Chris Orcutt right after this, 12 minutes before 9 o'clock at AM 1380, The Answer. Thank you, Charles. 7 minutes now before 9 o'clock. Our guest is Chris Orcutt, author and novelist. We're talking about lunar mining and the potential of finding enough helium-3 there as a nuclear fusion material. And I assume, Chris, we're talking about cold fusion here, a dream of physicists as long as I've been alive.
Well, cold, I want to clarify something. As you've made clear, Phil, I am not a scientist.
And neither am I.
but, you know, I've done a lot of research. There's a lot of research behind this novel. And as I understand it, cold fusion, we're really talking about a different form of fusion here. I mean, the primary benefit would be that there's no nuclear waste at the end of the fusion reaction. And in fact, the University of Wisconsin-Madison has a fusion institute there, and they have successfully fused helium-3 molecules. So this isn't a pie-in-the-sky science fiction idea. This can be done, has been done successfully. Lockheed Martin is working on what they call a compact fusion reactor that would fit into the back of a pickup truck.
I have read about that, and in fact, they're talking. When I read about that, it was looked upon as the application they looked at, you know, most immediately was taking it out as a temporary, essentially a really gigantic generator that could power 20,000 homes.
Yes, exactly, exactly. And they're supposed to, their company website and their publicity has been predicting 5 years, but I've read accounts of analysts saying that it's going to be about 10 years out. They're attempting to do fusion with heavy hydrogen, deuterium and tritium. And they're not going the helium-3 route because helium-3 is so rare here on Earth.
It's just really hard to get. And that really is what prompted this discussion, is it is in larger quantities. I don't know if we could call it abundant, but it is available on the lunar surface if we would go mine it. Chris, if somebody does decide they want to go mine it as a private contractor, what stands in the way from a legal perspective? Are there sovereign claims, or is it just the first person to get there?
You know, that's a really good point. I mean, I've never understood what the term possession is 9/10 of the law. I've never understood what that really means. But what I take it to mean is if you got it, you own it. And, you know, you look at the foundation of the United States, colonists from England and Europe, the Spanish, the French, the English, we just came over and took over this continent. And I think, you know, that's the precedent. You know, the precedent is simply manifest destiny. You know, the whatever country or corporate entity wants to take it can take it. I mean, if you go on the Internet today, Phil, I'm sure you've seen, you can, quote-unquote, buy a piece of real estate on the moon.
Yeah.
And they send you a certificate. You know, these companies are doing this. But go back, you know, 120 years and somebody will sell you the Brooklyn Bridge.
Yeah. If in fact we do get up there and we start mining this, is it more likely that we are going to wind up in partnership with other entities from, say, China and Russia? And now
yes,
even India,
I
which is developing a space program.
You are absolutely right about this. My research, one estimate that I've found is that to create a viable lunar mining colony and bring the material back to Earth, a parenthetical a little insert here, one space shuttle bay of this material, to give your listeners an idea of the power here, one space shuttle bay, or about 25 tons of helium-3, is projected to provide enough power for the entire United States for a year. But the estimate that I've read on the cost is, a conservative estimate, is that it would cost $1 trillion. Trillion, 1,000 billion. So I think it's undeniable that one entity cannot do this.
Yeah.
I think it's going to have to, it's going to require international, governmental, and corporate cooperation.
Chris Orcutt, I am so sorry that, we are out of time here. We've got to delve into this again, because, once again, the name of the new Dakota Stevens novel is...
A True Stranger Than Fiction.
And you know what? I highly recommend him. I haven't even read the second one yet, and I want to get to that one. The first one was great. Chris, it has been a pleasure. Thank you.
Phil, the feeling is mutual. Thank you very much.
Let's do it again sometime. Have a great day, everybody. Here comes Dennis Prager. I'll see you in the morning.